budget for Champagne Social Butterflies, the aspirational podcast for hopeless people, just like myself, your host, Donna Scott. We're on episode 9. Yeah, we've done really well. We've got to episode 9 already. How have you been keeping? I've been jolly good myself, thank you for asking. And since I last spoke to you, I've been up to all sorts. First of all, an apology for not getting this out on Monday, but unfortunately Monday just gone was the anniversary of my mum passing away, so I didn't really feel like recording a podcast and releasing it yesterday. Hope you forgive me. And I've got, no, that's not a very positive or uplifting thing to hear at the start of the podcast. I've got some good news. I've got some no news is good news kind of stuff as well. First of all, I'll say that myself and Neil had a gig last Thursday in Coventry. So that was my first foray back into stand-up since my operation. And it went pretty well, I think. Yeah, the room was flipping freezing. It was in a room above the Phoenix pub in Coventry, that beautiful blue building, you know, that's facing the back of the cathedral, the bombed out cathedral. I love that bit of Coventry. It's lovely, very pretty. And, you know, it's not like it was a few years ago, Coventry. I think it's really come on because of the student population, and there's a lot more, you know, nice bars to go to than there were. Well, that's just my impression. It's just nice. There was football on, so the beginning of the night wasn't very well attended. There was only about, what, 6 people in? But that finished and everyone came up. They all came up with the pitchers of beer and they were very up for having a good time, that audience. So that was good. And yeah, it was brilliant to see Oxy again. Oxy was comparing and the headliner was Johnny P, John Pearson. So we all had a lovely time. And Neil and his Ewan Kershaw guys fell over. Always a bit of slapstick is good, I think. He didn't mean to. Basically just, I don't know what he did, but he ended up with, we just watched him, me and Johnny P, going, oh God, he's probably broken something else, hasn't he? Oh, good grief. So they must have spilled something on the floor when he'd gone over on it. But, oh, I have to say, that was the first night of a weekly open mic that's going to be at the pub. And it's good. We're going to recommend you people go. It's freezing. So take your big coat. All right, just in case. Because that weather is turning now, isn't it? I mean, I only took my little jacket. And now I am wearing a massive cloak on the bus. It's only October. I'm wearing a massive cloak and a beret with a spider on it because I'm not at all a goth. Oh, what am I talking about? It's the Advent. It's Advent now, isn't it? It's for goth Christmas. That's what Halloween is. That's coming up. I'm really looking forward to goth Christmas. I've already had a little present for goth Christmas. We went to Aldi yesterday and they've got these squishy mallow cats and there's a, oh, it's lovely. It's a big cat cushion and he's got purple belly and it's called Autumn. I love it. So I've been squidging that and he's got a lovely face. Am I sad? Yes, of course I'm sad. So anyway, I said I've got some no news is good news, didn't I? Yeah. Well, you know, last week I said that myself and Neil had done the BBC New Voices audition and I said, oh, I think we've got through. I was totally confused. Basically, the 4 judges all sat there, they nodded, they smiled at me and they said, oh, we're going to email you. And I basically just took that as gospel. I was like, yeah, you've got through. I mean, talk about hubris. Oh yeah, that's naturally a yes, isn't it? That's just all 4 yeses right there. No, what they meant was they would email me with the results. And then I got a bit confused because I mentioned last week, you know, there were some other comedians I know who did their regional auditions and then they got told by the judges whether or not they had got a yes or not right there and then. So like everyone had gone, that's a yes from me, that's a no from me, but a yes from me, kind of like Amanda Holden and all of that X Factor stuff going on. But that wasn't what happened at ours. I don't know if it's because there's so few people, but you know, it's taking a while for these emails to trickle through. And the fellow I mentioned, he has got his email and he's not got through. And Neil's not got through. And I haven't heard a dicky bird. So there's me assuming I got through, just waiting for the email to know when I'm doing my next round. And I might have actually got through. I started doubting myself though. I really started doubting myself, thinking, oh, maybe I shouldn't have flashed them. Because I did. I mean, I didn't flash my boobs or anything, but you know, they asked me, is my story about Eric true? And I went, yeah, and I just flashed my belly. Well, what I'm going to say, it's very impressive that I look like a 90 case. If they'd seen me, you know, fully exposed, I don't so much look like a 90 case as a sad bear. Because I've got, like, lopsided sort of, like, droopy bits. I'm probably being too graphic. where's the smile? indeed. those are big eyes. Yep. So let me see, what else has been going on this week? Oh, you know, I'm going to be shoveling my sketches at the end. I've already recorded my sketches and my one-liners for Newsjack, BBC Newsjack. And I do have an apology for them because I didn't think they're very good. But I have had some compliments through for a couple of them online. So maybe they weren't as bad as I thought, but I don't know. They're not good in my eyes, but they're at the end. But you know, that's nice. And oh yeah, I've noticed that the nominations period for the BSFA Awards is now officially open. Now, I'm no longer chair of the BSFA, and I'm no longer anything to do with the awards side of things either. I'm still a director, but that's really sort of like in the background, far in the background, don't bother me kind of role. I know, guys, it's more important than that, but let's just say, don't bother me. And I'll hold you to that. Because if you bother me, something's gone wrong. But the BSFA Awards are now officially open, which means that if you are a member of the British Science Fiction Association, you can start nominating your favourite novels, short stories, pieces of artwork. You thought I was going to say pieces of eight then, didn't you? No, pieces of artwork, not pieces of eight. And also bits of non-fiction that you have seen that are science fictional in the last like 10 months. And it stays open because, of course, it's for all of 2019. So I'm just going to say, I've never had anything eligible that when I've been able to sort of like make you aware that things are eligible before. But I have got two stories that would be eligible. I've got one story that was published in January in the Not One of Us publication Else, called Smiley Wakes Up. You might have seen me post about that on Facebook. And I've got one coming up as my story Toast will be published in Synth, that's out in December. So that's not one that I can really sort of like talk about yet, but you know, that's two stories that'll be eligible for the BSFA Awards or other things. The one thing I can't do is I can't put them in my own thing, because that would be a bit crap, I think. That's my Best of British Science Fiction anthology, which is a new compressed publication for anything that's been published already in the year 2019. But tell you what, if you have anything that you think is eligible for the BSFA Awards, if you pop that in the list anyway, so make us all aware of it, because there's a list where you can make suggestions, that's also like really handy for me. If you are an author and you have had something published in 2019 that is science fictional, then just send it to me. Look on the New Compress website for details. And yeah, send me your stories. I'm also doing another anthology at the moment, which is the Arts Lab Science Fiction Anthology. And that is open to anybody in the Arts Lab or anyone in Northampton or Northamptonshire, or who is consider themselves a friend of Northampton or Northamptonshire, or a friend of the Arts Lab, or a foal, as we call them. Whee! That's my foal impression. So that is for all sorts of things, and I have my criteria here. If you would like to send anything to me, so this is the blurb. Okay, Northampton Arts Lab is a group of artists, writers, and thinkers dedicated to showcasing art from around Northampton. In creating this anthology, we seek to encourage submissions from local writers for whom this might be their first foray into genre, or it could be their thousandth. All are welcome. We'd also like to hear from anyone who has strong connections with Northamptonshire or any Arts Lab movements from any geographical location. Editor Donna Scott, that's me. Newcom Press, Best of British Science Fiction 2016 to 2019, so far. And Visionary Tone magazine is well versed in curating pieces for this type of project, and in the spirit of her experience with Visionary Tongue, is prepared to work with newer writers to help them bring their work to professional publication standard. As an Arts Lab project, we are looking for a wide range of work, and though it is not necessary to attend an Arts Lab meeting to participate, we will be running some writing and editing sessions over the next few weeks or months to encourage and inspire pieces. Right, that's all I'm going to say about it now. Go and have a look on Northampton Arts Lab page if you want more details of that. Because, you know, these are just adverts now, isn't it? You don't want that. You just want me talking about random stuff, don't you? Oh, incidentally, I do have a listening recommend, and it is a BBC Six programme, which is paperback writers. And the last one was Alan Moore, and he goes through like his favourite music and talks a bit about, you know, his work and Arts Labs. So gives them a mention. So that's well worth listening to. And I think coming up, they've got Neil Gaiman and Philip Pullman. So, good series. Oh, and a bit of a shout out for my Northampton writing pal, Paul Melhuish, who I've seen announced yesterday, has been signed by Silver Shamrock Publishing, and he's got a new novel coming out March next year called Dark Choir. I flipping loved Highcross Paul. It's really pulpy, exciting, grotesque horror. It's flipping awesome. So I'm really looking forward to reading Dark Choir. I'll probably be reading bits of it in Northampton Science Fiction Writers Group, won't I? Which will be nice. So myself, I've got some gigs coming up. I've got one tomorrow at the Sun Inn in Leighton Buzzard for Comedy Roadhouse. So if you're in the area, do pop along and come and see me. I'm going to be trying some brand new stuff. And then next week, I've got a charity gig at Chain Walk Club, or the Chain Club, which is opposite Northampton Hospital, along with Karen Bailey and Annette Fagan for Breast Friends. You can find the event on Facebook under Breast Friends Northampton, and tickets are £10. And you can contact Mandy if you want tickets on Mandy Orton at breastfriendsnorthampton.org. I can also tell you that I've got my first convention happening this month as well, post-surgery, seeing as I had to flipping cancel Worldcon because of this thing. But I'm going to BristolCon. My friend Gareth L. Powell is the guest of honour, and my other friend Andy Bigwood is the artist guest of honour. So that's going to be awesome. And yeah, I love it, Bristol. It's a lovely town. Like going there a lot. And I will be on a panel called The Future of Work with a few people. So that's The Future of Work. What does rapid technological advance mean for Joe and Josephine Public's jobs? Will we end up living in a Banksian post-scarcity utopia? Or is the future endless wage slavery and work, work, work until you die? Is there such a thing as working class SF, and who's writing it? Because that's an interesting question, isn't it? I mean, I don't know. Me? So yeah, BristolCon is on the 25th of October at the Doubletree Hilton Hotel. Good grief, I'm getting around, aren't I? But I'll tell you the one thing I'm not doing next year, by the looks of it. Leicester Comedy Festival. I am gutted. Basically, the one day I got offered was the day I'm going to see Baby Metal. So I can't do it because I'm going to be in Manchester. I am so upset. So then the deadline passed. I'm not doing a show at Leicester. I'm so sad. But it doesn't mean to say I'm not doing a show anywhere. My plan is to do a show called Laugh Belly. I wonder what that's going to be about, and have it somewhere. It'll be on somewhere. So yeah, this past week I've been back at work proper and seeing all the normal humans, and I've not been restricted to seeing just all the mad chisel that goes down in my street. I'm not sure I've noticed much else going on in my street apart from my neighbour has definitely had a puppy, because I can hear the puppy, but even more so I can hear my neighbour going, come on, come on, come on, come on, baby, come on, come on, come on. So yeah, I've yet to meet this puppy, but I know she's got a lot of cats, so I don't know what they make of it. They're probably going to take refuge in my garden like they normally do. So yeah, I've not really got much gossip going on. Thing is though, there's been so much gossip in the comedy world lately. Things have been happening. It's been crazy. And I don't really want to sort of contribute to the general malaise of the feeling of what's going on out there at the moment, because there's a lot of malaise. What is the opposite of malaise? Because malaise just means ill of ease in French, doesn't it? Bonnes? That's not a word. Contentez. Heureuses. Making shizzle up. Yeah, I was going to say, some of the stuff that's been going on has reminded me of the feelings that I had when I started comedy and when I started back after my break as well. I would like to say that comedy is massively influential on your mood, not always in a good way. Everybody knows the power of adrenaline and that lovely feeling that makes going back on the stage so addictive, but it comes with massive downsides as well. And I don't just mean, oh, the susceptibility of comedians to melancholy and depression, because there are theories about that as well, but I mean just general how you can rationalise and basically sort out your emotions with perspective at any given time because you are doing comedy. Is that actually depression? I don't know. But there are times when I've not been very rational and my perspective has been really screwy, especially with competitions. So my very first competition was the Jonglers Comedy Callback, which was in Jonglers, and that was crazy. Oh my God, that was so crazy. I had a really lovely time at the time, but there were some weird things about it. So it's the old Jonglers Club in Birmingham, and I was like on the last of the first section, but they had this really weird idea. It was a closed club, so there was no audience. There was only four lads from, I think, like some internet radio station, and the four judges and the staff, and there weren't even wasn't even a bar open or anything, so we were just like hanging around waiting to go on. And they let in 15 comics at a time, so it was like 15 comics and no atmosphere to go up and do 5 minutes. And to begin with, there was this American who needed a volunteer, and he'd expected there to be an audience. So I had to go and help him with his act, because he needed someone to go up and be a stupefied member of the audience. And I did exactly what he wanted. But the guys from the radio were like, oh, what's she doing? She's ruining it for him. I was doing exactly what I've been told to. It's like, just pretend to be a normal person in the audience. And basically go on stage and hold, you know, one of those egg bags tricks. So all I had to do was hold this egg bag and note that there was no egg in the bag. You've all seen that trick. And then whoop, there's an egg at the end of it when it spun round. I mean, that was as complicated as it got. And then I went on, and I remember saying hello to these guys who were like on the radio. Well, I didn't really say hello much to the judges. They seemed nice, they smiled, but I didn't get through. I can remember a few people got through. Of course, my friend Luke Horner, he got through. Oxy got through. Joe Lysick got through. I can't remember who else. But yeah, I didn't get through to the final. And then Pete Smith said, oh my God, they were terrible about you, weren't they? They had it in for you from the start. And I was like, who? What? And he said, oh, I put my foot in it. I didn't know you didn't know. and basically, these guys on the radio, they had this massive discussion before I even went on stage about how women are shit at comedy. And so they had it in for me right from the start. And then I went to them and was like, well, she wasn't very good. The thing is, it was like my 8th gig. So yeah, I wasn't very good, but I was a lot better than they gave me credit for, I'll tell you that. Yeah, they said that all women do period jokes. You know, I've never heard... Oh, no, I tell a lie. I have heard... There was a bit of a backlash about 5 years ago. I have heard some women comedians do period jokes, but it's usually guys. It's usually guys do period jokes. You've got, you know, you've got a pass, I suppose, but I'm not going to do any period jokes. I don't have any. I won't know what they are. I am like a dried husk. I am like a Barbie doll. I've been sewn up. I am a jamless tart. It's not nice. So those four radio guys, they did say, oh, she didn't do any period jokes, did she? But she was still not very good. Stuff you guys. And then Pete Smith was lovely because he had told me about this awful, awful podcast. He bought me my favourite dark chocolate, which is the 35p chocolate. So that was very lovely. So I think win-win. Yeah, I'd rather have had that chocolate. Thank you very much. But since then, I've done other competitions as well, and I thought I've done all right. And I wouldn't have said I've won, but I thought, well, I've done all right. I've not embarrassed myself or anything. And then I've had reviews come back. Like, it's like, why were you in the room? It can be very hurtful, but you take those things and you run with them. So like, yeah, there's a chortle review of me saying that my poems are a presentational distraction, which means he liked them. He just thought that I'm being fooled here. Yes, you are. Yes, you are. Because you're easy to fool. And I think doing competitions is all right. I don't like it. But because, you know, it's the worst kind of adrenaline thing. I think when you go to a gig, one of the best things about doing a gig is meeting new people and finding the camaraderie. I know that I've done competitions with people who I've done gigs with since, and they have been so het up in the moment of that competition that I've had to do the other gig for them to sort of like cement any memory of me at all into their brain. And I'm one of these people who remembers loads of people. I remember doing gigs with them from way, way back, and they won't remember me. And other people I know are normal. And I'm not normal, but it's still very hurtful when, you know, go, oh yeah, we did that thing, and then they don't remember you. It's like, I was the only woman. Do you remember the only woman? Apparently that's not memorable. I'm just not noticeable, guys. Like that competition, I baked blueberry muffins for everybody that nobody was feeling confident enough in the moment to eat, which meant I had like about 8 muffins before I went on stage. And that's not good. I was probably feeling a little bit sleepy, if I'm honest. So if I didn't do very well, it's because I was full of muffins. I did do quite well. Never you mind, Stephen Bennett. I'm saying all this because this weekend, some people have taken a loss very much to heart and they've learned from it. But I feel I really want to sort of like say, if you are in a competition, you've got to a final, if you have got through a stage, take that and be absolutely thrilled with yourself, because somebody saw you, somebody got you, and you have people who are there to cheer you on, who are on your side. And at the end of the day, not everybody can be Michael McIntyre and loved by millions, but you can be that person who is liked by a select bunch of awesome people. You know, millions of idiots or a select few awesome people. I know what I prefer. So here are my breaking news bits for this week. My one-liners starting with breaking news, then going into good week, bad week. I think this week I was very rushed. And I know I said, didn't I, that I'm not going to just send in shit. And yet here I am. I think I managed to submit 6 one-liners, but there isn't a single thing that I would pick out of any of these to have gone in the show. Now, normally I'm like, what are they doing? Why aren't you picking mine? Just because I said that I would share these with you, I'm here to show you that the process does mean that sometimes you can produce crap. And I will say, like, to anyone out there, you're allowed to produce crap. You're allowed. As long as you know, you can recognise that you can do better and take from your creative endeavours something and learn from them. I think it's important to acknowledge that, you know, not everything you're going to do is going to be golden. You know, and here is my less than bronzy one-liners. Anyway, buckle in. Aside, if you do listen to News Jack, there are some things on there this week that maybe this stuff would have beaten, but from my online community, there are so many really good jokes that these would not stand up against. So that's where they are. Okay, one-liners. Breaking news. Jeremy Clarkson, who once hit a man for not ordering him a steak, has called Greta Thunberg a spoiled brat. What's his beef? The Canal and River Trust has been criticised for heavily censoring a report into the collapse of the Whaley Bridge Dam, as dam isn't really a proper swear these days. Teachers have spoken out against sad fishing, a new trend on social media, not to be confused with fishing, which is just sad to vegans. Okay, so I've seen a couple of other rejects on the Canal and River Trust story and also the sad fishing story, and they're a lot better than mine, so matter those. And here are my good weeks, bad weeks. It's been a bad week for the Thin Blue Line after police in Hong Kong fired protesters with blue dye. It's been a good week for those protesters who are big fans of Braveheart. It's been a bad week for the Amazon rainforests as they continue to burn. It's been a good week for endangered forests of seaweed off the West Sussex coast, thanks to a campaign by David Attenborough who pointed and said, "Seek help." It's been a bad week for Ireland as Boris Johnson confirmed that after Brexit, custom checks will be a reality. It's been a good week for Boris Johnson because he still hasn't had a check on reality. See, I think there are jokes in there, but that's not what I've written. I've not written actual jokes. So, you know, I think I can definitely do something. I mean, maybe Avatar would have been a better thing than Braveheart. Braveheart's like 25 years old now. Avatar is at least 10. It's really bad. And the seek help one, I think I need to seek help, for it, frankly. There's a joke in there somewhere, but it's buried. Dead and buried. But anyway, let's move on to my sketch. This week, the BBC has been heavily criticised over its decision to uphold a complaint about news presenter Naga Manchetti, who had said she was furious about a racist comment made by Donald Trump. The BBC's head of editorial standards, David Jordan, said the problem was that Naga's co-presenter had led her into the sphere of opinion. Whereas, of course, the president's remarks had been in the rhomboid of really obvious racism. And I'm in the dodecahedron of being able to say, yes, Trump may have had motives for saying a racist thing because satire. I mean, what would happen if people were just allowed to give their opinions on TV willy-nilly, apart from naked attraction? And what if you couldn't have any opinions at all? Welcome to Strictly. I'm the totally impartial Tess Daly, and you just saw Chris and Karen there with the Paso Doble. What a way to open the show! Is that a neutral enough statement? I mean, that could be good or bad, couldn't it? Well done, guys! And I totally mean that in a well done for taking part way. So, let's go straight to the judges to see what they think. Shirley!
Let me lay down some cold hard facts here, Tess. This pair have just performed the Paso Doble. What is the Paso Doble? According to Wikipedia, it is a Latin style dance in which the man performs as a bullfighter and the woman as a cape.
Whoa, be careful, Shirley. That's a metaphor, which, as you well know, is a way of inferring meaning by trying to identify similarities between two ideas. And from a sociological perspective, there is inherent danger of imposing a conceptual model of thought through fundamental patterns of thinking metaphorically. In other words, stop telling us what to think.
Apologies. They did some dancing.
Thank you, Shirley. Craig?
They did some dancing, and I have an opinion about it the audience won't like. But I also have an opinion the audience would like. However, I'm not going to give either of them.
Glad to hear it. And now, Bruno.
Well, I thought they were absolutely fabulous.
Thanks, Bruno. And just to remind our audience once again that Bruno hasn't breached BBC guidelines by giving his opinion there. He always says that, so in effect, fabulous just means...
They did some dancing.
I like bits of my sketch. I like the really long bit in the middle where we go a bit too clever, but I think it's too long. So there's that. And of course, this story moved on by the time Wednesday came around last week, so it wouldn't have stood a chance, to be fair. Never mind. We move on. And that's it for another podcast. I hope you've enjoyed it. If you have, please like, share, tell your friends. Give me a 4 or 5 star review on iTunes. Notice the effect that had this week. You've affected the content. Thank you very much, fans. And I will be seeing you next week. So this is Donna Scott signing out.
You've been listening to The Lemonade Budget for Champagne Social Butterflies with Donna Scott. Theme music was "It Looks Like the Future, But It Feels Like the Past" by Dr. Turtle.